and determining which were most crucial to me, how I'm wired personally in terms of looking at different core values. Because each and every one of us is made up of tons of values. There's thousands of different values that we can have, but the interesting exercise is to find out what are the most important ones for you. And I go through that in the pathway class, and it's just a fun exercise to do. But commitment came up as one of my top three core values. And the quote out of the book goes, compassionate samurai say what they mean and do what they say. They make bold promises and keep them. Average people do what they say as long as it's convenient. So there is a great distinction of what we're talking about, the difference between are you committed or are you not committed? Because commitment is about doing what you say and abiding by your word, so your word means something. And that's what commitment's about. And when I use the word commitment, let's kick off and just look at it. When I use the word commitment, it's really incredible how I'll use that word in languaging, and it's incredible. Okay, somebody's got a dog barking, and they need to put themselves, I don't know how they got off mute, but I will re-mute the line if need be. Just hit *7, that will re-mute you. Thank you. Okay, so the word commitment, so you need to look at the word commitment and say, okay, what does the word commitment do to me? What kind of emotional response do I have when I hear the word commitment? And it's incredible how people have different responses to that word. I see it a lot. People go in different directions on it. Some people get depressed about it. Some people get, you know, they just kind of flee from it. The word commitment to them means a lot of different things. So we just have to look at what does that mean to you? What is the word commitment? What does it trigger inside of you when you hear the word commitment? Commitment doesn't have any conditions. In other words, it's not preconditioned. I hear a lot of people muting. Maybe let me do mute again, see if I can get everybody muted. Hang on. Okay, so going back to commitment. So it's not about conditions. You take the action no matter what else is happening. In other words, once you make a commitment to do something, it's not about conditional. It's not if everything else goes right in my life. It's not only if I feel like doing it. It's not, well, it doesn't matter because I didn't have time. A commitment is a commitment. You take the action no matter what else is happening. The samurai, when you look back at the samurai, and we know that these comes out of the Japanese warriors, but the samurai were incredibly principled people. They would keep their word even if it meant their death. In other words, their word came ahead of their life. And I'm not telling you that that's what you need to do in your life. I'm just suggesting to you that that's how principled they were. They put a value on honor that we rarely see today in our society. And it wasn't that they didn't value life. It was the concept that they valued keeping their word and their principles more. So what was more important to them? And a lot of them, the rationale behind all this was the value that they had in their life, the value for their life. For them, spiritually, it was, you know, if they led a principled and fulfilled life, they believed in afterlife, and of course they would have a more successful afterlife if they lived a valued and principled life. We can look at Christianity and kind of talk the same way. When you talk about, like, the Columbine incident where that little girl said, you know, the guy with the gun asked her, do you believe in Jesus Christ? And she said yes. She didn't give up on her values. She didn't compromise who she was. She didn't compromise her commitment to the Lord. That wasn't the response he was looking for. We don't know what he might have done if she would have responded differently and lied about her faith, but she chose faith first. And that's what she chose, because it was more important to choose faith and be who we are than to compromise on that. So again, like with samurai, worse than death for them was living an unfulfilled life or one without principles. So when you get to the word commitment, what is your commitment? What are you willing to do in your life, no matter what it might cost you? What is that commitment? So commitment as a word is an incredible word. It carries a tremendous amount of weight with it. It carries about who we are as human beings. Commitment is also the basis for trust. And trust is the foundation of all relationships. Therefore, when you look at breaking commitments, it equates to destroying trust, and which means it equates to crumbling creeks, crevices, cracks in relationships with people that can cost us our lives, because foundational to our life here on Earth is relationships. What's more important than relationships? What's more important than a relationship with Christ, a relationship with your family, relationships with friends, relationship with your Manitex people, relationships at the core of what is important in our life, because it's how we impact other lives and how other people impact us. So critical to us is that we build a level of trust. And if you break commitments, you're deteriorating that trust level. I mean, it just crumbles in front of you. People don't trust you. They're not going to want to be with you. They're not going to want to associate with you. The only types of people, it's going to be like attracts like. You're going to be lingering around and collecting around you people who are untrustworthy, people that break commitments. And then you can have the pity parties around all of this, and you can wonder, why is my life not changing? Why am I not growing? Why am I not successful in my Manitech business? What kind of people are you attracting? Who are you drawing into your life? Are you being totally committed with your word? Are you being totally trustworthy? In your Manitech business, if you make promises to people, oh, I'll call you back. Oh, yeah, let's do a three-way call tomorrow. I'll give you a call. And you don't follow through. I can only begin to tell you what that happens to the people in your organization. I have it happen with people in my organization. I have some leaders in my organization that don't follow through on commitments. And what happens to me is the seepage comes. All of a sudden, I start getting phone calls from people in the organization saying, Mary Jo, I'd much rather work with you. And I'm like, well, you know, you can work with anybody in my organization. I don't have a problem with that, because I will work with somebody who's 120 layers below me in my organization. As long as you're committed to Manitech and you're committed to making this work for you, I'm totally committed to you. But you've got to make a commitment. Well, when I find out why they're bypassing their other leader, the typical response is, I'll leave a message and I won't hear from that person for 2 weeks, or they never get back, or they never follow through, or they never, it's just, you know, and you want to be careful of people that just like to whine about those things, but the concept is you got to be committed. People in the field are expecting to be able to trust you, especially when your future in the business is dependent on their success. So what is it all about that we don't step up and make commitments to people and hold true to our commitments? Don't break your promises. Don't break commitments. And when people leave a message, you go, well, Mary Jo, if somebody leaves a message and I don't get back to them for 2 weeks, I haven't broken a commitment. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, let's not go there. If you don't want to get back to people who leave messages on a timely basis, then get rid of your message machine. Just inherent in having a message machine is the fact that you are waiting to get messages and you're going to be prompt in getting back to people. That's inherent in just having the message machine. If you don't plan on returning messages, then don't ask for them. Follow me? So you are making a commitment. It doesn't have to be. You can make a commitment just purely by actions you take, by things you have in your life. You're making commitments. It doesn't have to be just a verbal commitment. So make sure you look at how you're running your life and whether you're following through on commitments you make. Examples of broken commitments that people make daily is like when you tell your little kids, hey, I'll come up and tuck you in, and then you don't. You get busy watching, you know, CSI. Well, when can CSI ever be more important than the impact you have on your children? Trust me, it can never be more important. Never, under any circumstances. And yet we tell our children that, and we tell them we'll go play with them, or we tell them we'll take them to the zoo, or we tell them we'll do this. I mean, it's unbelievable how many commitments parents break to their kids. And the ramifications of that are so unbelievably critical that I can't even begin to expound on all of them. But, you know, the concept that they learn not to trust you. So when you tell them, now when they turn 16 and you tell them not to drink and drive, if you've already taught them not to trust you, why are they going to trust you on these bigger issues when they couldn't trust you on coming up and tucking them into bed or taking them to the zoo? You've already broken that layer of trust. So it's gone. So just the cost and the price you pay and the price they're going to pay because of it is too expensive a price. The other thing that happens to these children when we break commitments to them is they start looking at themselves like, oh, mom doesn't really care about me. she really doesn't love me, or dad doesn't really care about me, or I'm not worthy. They start believing they're not worthy of the attention and affection that they're expecting to get. So all of that starts triggering. I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. All of the things that start falling out of that. I don't think those are the signals that you want to send to your children. So start reexamining what kind of commitment you're making to them and which ones are you breaking and why are you doing that, because the price is too costly. You're not seeing it perhaps today, but it'll come up. And those are the kids that, when they're in their 20s and 30s, they're not going to be successful in marriages because they don't understand commitments either, because you train them that commitments aren't important. We wonder why the divorce rate keeps going higher and higher, because we're examples to our children about commitments. If they're not important, then we set an example. We set a standard for them. We need to choose differently to change that. So promises to take, again, being late for appointments. My goodness gracious, how many of us show up late on appointments? I'm like a nutcase on this. Lydia, I drive her crazy. I'd rather be 10 minutes early. I never am late for appointments. I mean, I am just absolutely obnoxious about being on time. And I didn't always act that way, but when I understood what the word commitment meant, that changed my life. It transformed me because I respect people. I respect their time. I respect and honor them for wanting to spend time with me, and that's one of the ways to show that respect is to be on time. When you're late for things and people get into horrible habits around this, it becomes a habit, and it's a disastrous one. When you're late for people over and over and over again, what you're telling them is you're more important than they are, and I don't think that's a signal you want to send to people. So look at your behavior around being late. And people go, well, I didn't know I was going to get in a traffic jam. That's why you leave 10 minutes with at least 10 to 15 minutes extra. Some of you time it like it takes 8 minutes to get to the dentist office. So you leave at 7.5 minutes before the appointment. I mean, it's a killer. One little thing happens on the road over there. A little backup in traffic because somebody got a flat tire and you're late. Again, same thing. Why are we late? Because we're choosing to be late. So be committed with your time, show the respect, honor other people, and make sure that happens. And you can say, well, they're never on time for me, Mary Jo. When I go to the dentist's office, he makes me wait for an hour. Change their behavior. You guys, this is so critical for people to get this. I went to a dental appointment one time, and I was sitting in the lobby for like 25 minutes later than my appointment. I stepped up to the counter. I said, this is unacceptable behavior. And they looked at me, and I said, it's totally unacceptable behavior. You're showing total disrespect for me by having an appointment for me and not meeting it. And I'm not going to go to this dentist. I refuse to, enable him and endorse him and his behavior. And I walked out. They came running out to me out of the room. The dentist came out. I went and sat and met with this guy. I walked out of the room, and one of his assistants, I said, is he lying to me or is he telling me the truth? That mine was an exception. And she looked at me, lowered her head, and said, Mary Jo, he's not being truthful. We're late for the majority of our patients. I go, thank you. At least she was honest with me. He was trying to make up excuses. You have a choice. You can live your life in excuses. Why do you want to get into excuses? I never use excuses. You never hear an excuse come out of my mouth. I don't use excuses. You make commitments and you follow commitments. So be on time. And if you have an appointment, right now my orthodontist I go to, she says, well, Mary Jo, we can't guarantee because this. And I said, when can you guarantee me you'll meet the commitment you make on my appointment? And she goes, well, if you schedule it at 1 o'clock when we all get back from lunch, we're never late for that. And I go, great. So you know what? For the last year and a half while I've had these braces on, my appointments at my orthodontist are always at 1 o'clock. Always at 1 o'clock. And it's my mechanism of honoring my dentist to keep, because otherwise I would probably quit him as well. But, I mean, at least I've got it. I know that I will never be asked to come in that room after 1 o'clock. I will always be there at 1 o'clock or 5 minutes to or 10 minutes to, and I'll always get in. So clean up your act around being late and help support others to clean up their act so they can see. Because, see, these people don't see the impact they have on others. It's an arrogance. It's I'm more important than you. And that's really what you're saying. And some of you are looking at yourself going, Mary Jo, I don't think I'm more important. You are saying that. When you rob people because you're late to appointments with them, you're announcing you're more important than they are. Because what are you telling them about their time they're wasting waiting for you to show up. All right, one of the probably the most callous ones out there is telling people you're going to call them back. How many of you just do that because it's words just come out of your mouth? You know, when you're meeting with somebody or you say, oh, how are you? Good to see you. Da, da, da. Oh, I heard you're doing this. Oh, yeah, we're doing this and this and this. And they go, okay, well, let me tell you, I got to run now, but I'll give you a call tomorrow. You know, you just say that as some nicety. We use that language as a quote-unquote nicety. Well, people, it's not a nicety. It's called a commitment. When you say to somebody, I'll call you back. And the reason you tell me, then I get this rationale. They go, oh, Mary Jo, that was just something I threw out there. I mean, whether I do or not, she really doesn't matter. And I'm going, how do you know what's going on in the other person's head? That person could go home and go, oh, my gosh, I can't wait to hear from Mary Jo tomorrow. She's going to call me, da-da-da-da, and I'm excited about hearing what she has to say, and da-da, right? And the next day comes, and Mary Jo gets busy and decides not to call him. What is this person thinking about me at that point? She might have been basing her whole day on Monday to get the excitement about hearing from Mary Jo about XYZ, and then I choose that, oh, I just kind of threw that out there. She's going to understand if I don't call her. Wrong. Watch the language. All these things are broken commitments. Broken commitments. They destroy relationships. They destroy businesses. They destroy your health because they cause stress. They pretty much destroy everything. You have no trust. You're destroying your integrity, because what is integrity? It's your word. If your word doesn't mean anything, there goes integrity. And we are a society fraught with this problem. One of the reasons Brian wrote this book is he's going, we're in a crisis situation, and if we don't start reversing these trends that are epidemic, where are we going to be? So we need to start this. We need to make it happen. We need to become committed people. We need to follow through on our words and rebuild integrity in this nation. So, and when you have integrity, I'll tell you one thing, people are going to be attracted to you like flies. They're going to come after you like crazy because they're going to go, oh, my gosh, she means what she says. It's unbelievable how many calls Lydia gets from people in the field going, oh, my gosh, Mary Jo said she's going to send us out, and guess what happened? She sent it out. She goes, I can't believe she sent it out that same day. I got it the next day. I was thinking maybe a week from now I'd hear from her, but I got it the next day. And Lydia goes, well, didn't she tell you she was going to mail it to you on Monday? And she goes, well, yeah, but, you know, because you see the standing that when you show up in total commitment, you shock people, and that's a neat thing. I want you all to go out there and shock people with your level of commitment, the greatness. And even like around, you know, sometimes you say, well, Mary Jo, sometimes I can't make my commitment. Like one of my commitments around the I Can program is that I've guaranteed everything. I said, you put an order in on an I Can starter kit, we'll ship it in 24 hours. Well, one of my production facilities on the flip chart delivered the flip charts, and you know what? They used the wrong lamination and paper. So it looked like it was so flimsy and so horrible. There was no way. Here I'm sitting on 500 of these flip charts that are like a piece of spaghetti. They had no backing. They had no strength. And I was like, there's no way we can ship these out. So immediately I had Lydia get all the orders that we had in stock, and this company was already 3-4 days late, so we'd already sent an email. But I sent another email, and I said, people, here's what's happened. I am so sorry. I apologize. You know, it's something outside of our control. But I made an apology. Every single person that had an order in our house at that time got an email from us highlighting what the problem was and giving them a new date when we would ship. So even if a commitment can't, you go and renegotiate with people. You renegotiate, and sometimes it's not really technically a negotiation because there's no other way. You couldn't get it out. But you take the energy and time to touch that person's life. And it's amazing how many people got back and said, hey, no big deal, it's okay, I can get them next week, that's fine, we don't get, but the idea is that's an evidence of how committed you are to doing what you say. So you stay in alignment with your values. Now there's a group of people, so everybody's got it, commitment's so crucial, we kill relationships, we kill our business, we kill relationships, we just destroy everything around us when we can't keep commitments. So that's how crucial they are. Now we need to look at people that avoid breaking commitments because they get the first fact. They get the idea that breaking commitments is a bad thing and destroy things. So what do they choose to do? They choose not to make commitments at all. Hey, and Clemmer follows up in the book. He's so cute. He calls them, okay, so you can be Marianne Mediocre or John Average Man, two people who make up excuses for not making any commitments. So if you don't make any commitments, then you don't have to ever worry about breaking them, right? So they lead lives of convenience, lives that never amount to accomplishing much because life will not amount to much if you don't make agreements. In other words, if you don't set goals and you don't make commitments in your life to push yourself beyond, step outside the box, get out of that comfort zone, creating something unique and different, if you don't make agreements and set goals and make commitments to create something, you know what your life becomes? It becomes a life of convenience. So the idea is to avoid making commitments just means to avoid living, to avoid stepping in and making a difference in this world, which every single one of us needs to start doing because we need to create a better tomorrow. We have generations of kids coming up that are just wrought with issues because of what we've created, because we've let down this country. We've let down people around us. We need to step up and play bigger roles. So it's about making bigger commitments, not avoiding making any commitments. We're too committed to looking good by not breaking any more commitments, so we don't make any. Here's a quote from the book. He said, "Mediocrity is the height of selfishness. So playing life small is not where it is at. Mediocrity is unacceptable." And here's a list of excuses that we've heard in explaining why we lead our mediocre lives. This comes out with so many people that I coach as well. I can coach people and they go, "Well, you know, Rachel, I really don't need to be successful in nanotech." And I go, "Really? You don't? Why is that?" I go, "Well, I don't need all that stuff. I don't need those fine things in life. I don't need a house. I don't need a better house. I don't need a better lifestyle. I don't need a new car. I don't have the need, so I really don't need." And I go, "Oh, really? What about your next-door neighbor?" "Oh, Mary Jo, my next-door neighbor's really in a bad plight. You know, they had their mom died of cancer 2 years ago, and it's really a struggle over there, and I'd love to be able to help send them to, you know, camps during the summer or, you know, take them, you know, gifts and things and buy Christmas presents and just pour love into them in a direction that I can help support." And I go, "Great, so what do you mean you don't need your magic business to be successful?" It's not about you. So rationalizing that you don't need things in your life, "I don't need any. I don't need a bigger house. I don't need a bigger car. I don't need a bigger thing. I don't need X, Y, Z. But boy, oh boy, are you kidding me? I want my business to be off the charts successful because it's only through that that I can pour and have a greater impact on other people. Mediocrity is unacceptable." And then we have the rationale. People get jealous. They start comparative. Well, people who have the finest things in life are simply materialistic. Oh, my gosh. Where can I throw up on that one? Where does all this judgment come? All this judgment comes out of how we were raised and all the media attention we get. Let go of that. The key to happiness is to have no desires. Oh, excuse me? The key to happiness is to have many desires, desires to make a difference in this world, to be fulfilled, to feel like you've really gone after. So when you delete yourself of desires, then you delete yourself of living or making a difference. Another one famous is, "It's just God's will in my life. My magic business is working and it's God's will." I've heard that. I've done some coaching around that in some of my power trainings last year. People saying, "Oh, the reason I'm not presidential yet is I just really believe God knows that I'm not ready to step into that role." I'm like, "Oh, really?" I said, "Okay, so you tell me that if you became presidential, how much more income would you earn?" And they go, "Oh, my gosh, Mary Jo, I'd be making twice, three times what I'm making." I said, "Okay, now let me ask you the next question. What would you do with all that income if you earn that extra income?" And they go, "Oh, there's incredible. I got this foundation on the street. I also have a mission, some mission work I want to do." And they start giving me this list, okay? And then I go, "Okay, so what you're telling me, let's go back to what you said at first. You're telling me that God's holding you back from getting to presidential because he doesn't want you to be funding the foundation, the mission, the this, the..." And they just got dead quiet on the telephone. See, I don't think it has anything to do with God's will that you're not successful in your business. You can't argue with me that you're not making it in your magic business because God doesn't want you to make it in your magic business if what he laid on your heart is a mission to make this a better world, a mission to go out in the mission field or to set up a foundation or to put more money into manna relief or to give you... I mean, if he's laid this on your heart, he's given you those desires of your heart. Now, not making it in the manifesting business is not his will for you, because he's laid on your heart the desires of your heart to create that. And perhaps manifest that vehicle to give you the ability to create what he's laid on your heart. So be careful that you don't get into that kind of rationalization. We're just coming up with excuses or reasons, okay? And the fact that you can't be spiritual and have success, I don't even want to go there. There's some unbelievably successful people that are unbelievably spiritual people. I mean, we can look at some of the books out there, you know, the Purpose-Driven Life. You know, these people, these authors, these people, these pastors are unbelievably led. So how can you say, oh, but that, you're just rationalizing. You're using reasons or excuses. Throw the excuses out. Don't accept mediocrity. Move forward. And as Clemmer says in the book, it says, your choice, you can become a slave to the tyranny of reason instead of enjoying the liberty brought about by results. I love that. Take that quote and put that up and say, it's my choice. Am I going to choose to be a slave to the tyranny of reason instead of enjoying the liberty brought about by results? Huge. So what does the Compassionate Samurai do? The Compassionate Samurai makes big commitments. They keep them, and they never offer reasons when you don't make things happen. It's not about excuses, not about reasons. It's just you make it happen. You make it happen. So what are we committed to when we're not making agreements and keeping them? Because you're always committed. No matter whether you make something happen or you don't make it happen, there's a commitment in your life. A lot of people don't like this, but it's absolutely true. So even when you make a commitment to somebody, you break the commitment, you're committed to something. It's not doing that specific event that you just broke. In other words, if I make a commitment to you that I'm going to call you tomorrow and I don't call you, I'm committed to something. Clearly, the results show that I wasn't committed to calling you, so what was it that I was committed to? And I just gave you, right out of the book, some options that he puts in. They're also true. Some people are committed to looking good. Because if I don't make commitments, I never have to worry about, you know, looking bad to people or breaking them. So I'm committed. I'd rather look good than ever make any commitments. How about committed to being comfortable? How many of you know people like that? I know them everywhere. I watch these people who just live their lives, and all they do is worry about how many cars they have, their swimming pool, their house, their kids, their this, their this. They never look beyond it. It's about, I want comfort in my house. That's all. I'm living to be comfortable. So when I go to them, I say, hey, why don't you come work at the foundation, or let's make a contribution. Can you make a commitment to give $10,000 a year to the foundation? And they look at me like, I mean, they just freak out. I'm not asking to take away from what they have. I'm asking them to make a commitment to create something better in their life. But they just, it's just like, because why? They're committed to being comfortable. If Mary Jo asks them to think bigger or play a bigger game or take on a bigger role in this world, or let's make a difference in this world, and right away they kind of shrink. They just kind of close up because they're committed to what? Being comfortable. If they had to push themselves out of their comfort zone to make more money or to do something different or go work in a foundation or to do, you know, coaching of people that are in dire need, oh my gosh, that would make them so uncomfortable. I watch people who coach at my foundation. They go, oh, my gosh, Rachel, I'm not equipped to do this. And I go, really? I said, do you feel led by the Lord? The Lord will equip you. You just have to follow what he's giving you and laying on your heart. And all of a sudden, you know, they show up, they start coaching, and they come back and just tell me, even though it's overwhelming, the kind of issues that they're grappling with, it's so rewarding to just feel like they're a part of making a difference in people's lives. They're pouring into people that they never would have had that opportunity without the opportunity given to them at the foundation. So what a great thing. But they had to get out of their comfort zone. They had to get rid of being committed to being comfortable and make a different commitment, a commitment to make a difference. Committing to be right, that's a huge one. We have so many people that commit to being right. There's nothing wrong with being right. The only thing wrong with committing to being right is that what? It immediately makes it necessary for somebody to be wrong. And you find that happening in your relationships. I can tell any relationship you have, look at the spousal relationship or your kids or whatever, and watch how many times you have to be right with them. I saw this huge one because I travel so much. I come home, and I love to tell this story, and some of you have heard it before, but the story is that, you know, I'd come home and my husband, and we'd be talking over the weekend or something. He'd go, well, honey, you know, I see he loves movies. He goes, well, and I say, well, go to a movie. He goes, well, you know, there's this one and this one. I looked on the television, but we've already seen it. And I look at him and go, no, we haven't seen it. He goes, yes, we did. We saw that movie. Well, with me being on the road all the time, my husband goes to a lot of movies. And so sometimes I'm not with him, like most of the time. So the intriguing thing is that I would get so angry with him about that he's telling me I've seen a movie when I never saw it. You know, and I go, how do you know what movies I've seen? I clearly know. I don't remember it. I've never seen it. Da, 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 da. So why are you telling me what I've seen? I mean, it would just irritate me no end. So I'd get into a little spat with him on that. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, are you kidding me? What do I need to be so right about? Why do I need to be right about it? Because, you see, the purpose, me being committed to being right, is robbing me of having the kind of relationship I need to have with my spouse, which is a wonderfully, wildly romantic relationship. That's what I want with my spouse. So if why do I have to be right? Some of you guys, you can't even drive in a car with your spouse. You want to be right about what's the best way to get somewhere, and you get into a fight over how to drive the car from one location. But I've seen it. I've been in cars with some of you guys. It's incredible. It's like, who cares if it takes 5 extra minutes to get to a location? Quit having to have to be right. Let it go. It's unimportant. If you start weighing it against having a wildly romantic, loving relationship with your spouse, you'll start seeing the price you're paying. Give up on being right. How do you do that? Is it easy transition? I'm going to tell you the first few times it's not too easy because you're so used to claiming to being right. You're caught up in it. It's a commitment you have. So you got to release it. Now when my husband talks about movies and he goes, oh, you know, we've already seen that one. I go, oh, we have, honey? Okay. Do I care? What's so important about whether we've seen that movie or not? It's not critical. It's trivial. So get away from the trivial stuff. And let go of being right, because the minute you need to be right, somebody else has to be wrong. And that's what causes immediate consternation and strife in a relationship. So be careful on that matter. Of course, there's certain things that you want to be right about, right? I mean, that, you know, your spiritual walk. But some of you guys get so self-righteous about that when you're talking to people, you're not very impactful on their life. And I'm not asking you to agree with somebody who comes across with a totally different outlook on their spirituality. I'm just saying that maybe you become a better listener instead of so intent on being right and proving them wrong. There's a different approach to that that softens and becomes a lot more convincing and impactful on people's lives than being so committed to your righteousness instead of just really loving on people. The next thing in the outline talks about committed to being accepted. So that's another thing that you might be having a competing commitment. You want to be accepted. So a lot of times instead of making a commitment to greatness in our life, we're more worried about what other people will think about us if we happen to achieve that greatness. Maybe we'll lose friendships. Maybe people will desert us. Well, if I really become a millionaire, if I really do, I can marry Joe, and 12 months from now I'm making $20,000 a month, you know, what are my friends going to do? I'll lose my neighbors. What are my people at church? They're going to think I'm materialistic, or, you know, they have all this rational. So it's better, it's more important for you, and you're more committed to being accepted by people that keep you at a lower level or keep you at a lesser impact on the world, because it's easier and the people accept you when you start elevating you to other things that happen and you're worried about whether you're going to be accepted. So that becomes a big part of it. So all these things are things that run our lives that we need to cast aside and say, you know what? I don't want competing commitments in my life. I want to be committed to what I'm committed to, and I'm leaving the other things behind. So we look at competing commitments, and I gave you a list of questions in the outline that talk about competing commitments, because you want to discover what your competing commitments are. There's a list of questions that come out of the book on how to find those. And what you do is you just ask those questions and answer them honestly. You know, look at yourself and how you're valuable, what you're really good at, what's your main strengths in all the things that you do, and then how do I appear to others in order to gauge my personal worth? Wow, those are the good questions. If I'm really successful, what do I fear may change in my relationships with my friends and family? So you're going to start digging into finding out what is it that's standing in your way. What is the commitment? What are you really committed to? That's what these questions help generate. So take some time to go through some of those questions. You might really see yourself in a different light. You might see what you're really committed to instead of your dreams, instead of what the Lord's laid in your heart, instead of, you know, making a difference in this world. What are your real commitments? If you can tell me you're committed to some of those things, but your results you create will tell me differently, because results never lie. Results are totally honest. They never lie. So what your commitment is will show up in the results you create. Okay, so that's commitment. Big word. Big word. Tons of meaning behind it. Tremendous concept. If you build it in your character, I'm telling you, people, it'll just transform your life. The second chapter in Clemmer's book is called Personal Responsibility. And he put the quote in there, a man can fail many times, but he isn't a failure until he begins to blame someone else. And our entire society is set up to blame other people because we've come into this victim mentality that we're victimized by everything around us. We become victims to our family life. I came from a dysfunctional family. I want to ask everybody on this call, is there anyone on this call that believes their family was totally functional? I mean, wasn't there some dysfunction somewhere in your family? I mean, everybody has dysfunction in it. Because why? Because we don't go to get a college degree on how to be a parent. We only learn how to parent by what our parents have done. Some of us don't even understand that we can choose differently. We just fall into the same old habits and create generational bondage by continuing some of the bad habits that our parents had with us. That's just the way we are. So we created, there's an inherent dysfunction that's built in the system that repeats itself generation after generation. And then we get into, you know, problems in our life, and we go back, oh, my mother didn't love me, oh, my father deserted us, or my da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- the blame game is a zero-sum game. Zero. It gets you nowhere. You've got to walk away from blame game. Quit pointing the finger. Quit accusing other people. Quit blaming other people. Start with the viewpoint of what I create in my life is my creation and my choice. Everything you have and everything you don't have and everything you ever will have in your life is because of the choices you make. For some of you, that's an incredibly incredible viewpoint, because you've been walking on earth with a totally different viewpoint all your life. You've been able to point a finger. You've been able to make it somebody else's issue. You've been able to blame it on something else in your life. I'm going to suggest that if you step up and you start taking the viewpoint that everything you have, everything you don't have, and everything you will have is because of the choices you make, you'll create a totally different life for you. The most important part of taking that viewpoint is it empowers you to create whatever you choose to create. As long as you hold yourself victim to people around you and circumstances around you and all the things that might have happened in your past, you're forever going to be frozen. You're never going to catapult yourself forward. You're choosing to be locked down. You're choosing to be caught up in something that you, how can you let your past control your future? You can't. But I'm asking you to dig deep and look at yourself and say, why do I continue to choose to allow my past to control my future? What you choose to do from this point forward doesn't have to have any relationship with your past. It's totally your choice. And you get, when we get that, you'll see that your life becomes that canvas, that piece of canvas, and you take out the paints and you start painting the picture. And all of those are your choices. If you want to put blue on that canvas, that's your choice. Yellow, red, green, whatever you want to paint on it, your choice. That's the position of a compassionate samurai. They take the viewpoint of total personal responsibility. It's not that every event, understand this, people, it's not that every event that ever happened to you, you were responsible for. It's just a viewpoint that you take about your life, because it catapults you into the ability to respond. See, that's what the word responsible is. It's ability. Responsible means able to respond. You have the ability, and that means capable of moving forward and capable of not allowing your past to control your future. How do I start making a new direction in this? Well, the best thing you can do is first start changing your language. So many of us choose victim language. we talk about, oh, I have to take the kids to school, I have to do this, I have. Every time the word have to comes out of your language, and trust me, get rid of it. Get rid of it, cross it off, never let it hit your mouth again. And just watch your language today or during this week. You're going to see the words have to come out so much. If you haven't done this work before, and some of you have done the work and have forgotten it, start doing it again. Get rid of the words have to. If I tell you I have to go pick up the kids at school, I'm depressed, I feel suppressed, I'm victimized by it, it's out of my control, so I'm down, and you get glum. If I instead change the language to exactly what it is, I don't have to go pick up the kids. You could leave those kids at school. You have consequences of that, but you don't have to do anything. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to eat. You don't have to work. You don't have to do anything. There are consequences to you not doing things, but you don't have to do anything. Take the viewpoint. Step into it. I choose. So instead of saying, I have to pick up the kids at school, I go, I choose to pick up my kids at school. You watch how that emotionally changes your disposition. All of a sudden, you're happy about it. You're excited about it. You become upbeat. It totally changes your psychology. The have-to language is one of the reasons we have so much Prozac in this world, because we're so victimized by everything, and it's victim language. Become empowered and take the responsible language. I choose to go pick up my children. What a delight it is. You just shift that languaging, and I guarantee you, you're going to change your disposition. Many people look at job situations and they go, "Well, I have to go to work, or I have to. I don't have a choice, Mary Jo. I have to work at this job." And I go, "You don't have to work at any job." And they go, "Well, yeah, but if I don't work at this job, how would I find another one?" See, what they're using an excuse. They use an excuse why they're victims. Their excuse is what? They're afraid of they're not going to be able to find another job, so they stay in a job that they hate, they don't like, it's miserable, and they pretend that it's not their choice. Well, quit pretending it's not your choice. Look at a mirror and say, I'm choosing to stay at this job. Fear, again, is controlling you. But don't ever try to tell me that you have to work at a specific job. I worked with a woman. I did some counseling yesterday at church with a woman who asked me to meet with her. And her big thing was she had to work two jobs. You like that? And I go, no, you don't have to do that. You're choosing to do that. Why are you choosing it? Because you want to provide for your family. Your husband walked out on you. Da-da-da. So you're choosing that. And she goes, oh, yeah, okay, my joy. So she started changing her language. And you should have seen her, excuse me, her disposition just in my meeting with her changed, totally changed. She came in with her sunken shoulders, head down, all this stuff. By the time we were done, she was delighted, she was excited, she was happy, she was joyful. And I worked on just helping her with languaging about how she talked about her life. And then she talked about potentially getting a home-based, you know, a job that she could work out of home, and she had some alternatives. And she goes, but I really can't look at that because, I'd have to buy. And I go, whoops, there you go again. So we started looking at alternatives for her. She's totally on fire. She's going to call me back this week. I said, here, you can't make a decision about this. We have the facts. Let's go do the research. So I sent her on a path. What a wonderful thing. Just changing languaging and looking at your life like it's hard to make a difference. So it's important to do that. The average person does not believe they have choices. Why? Because if they looked at their life that they had choices, then they'd have to be held responsible for what they've created. Oh, my goodness, is that a scary proposition for some people. But I'm going to tell you, if you don't take the viewpoint that you're responsible and you have choices, you're never going to move out of the predicament you've created for yourself. So it's come from able to respond and responsible. What about abuse or extreme situations? Is it still about choice? And I just gave you one example. There are plenty of them out there, but Viktor Frankl is one of my favorites. Man's Search for Meaning. If you haven't read that book, I highly recommend it. You will never look at your life again like you have tough times. Viktor Frankl was a Jew that was put in a concentration camp and, of course, had phenomenal experiences there that were just so horrendous that you can hardly believe he survived. But his whole concept, and I gave you a quote out of what he said in the outline, his whole concept was that They can steal everything from you, but they can never take away from you your choice and your attitude. You're the last of the human freedoms is to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstance. And you can choose your own way. So he found that no matter what happened to him, which was so horrific, he could always choose to have a pleasant attitude and choose because that's something they could never rob from him. Beautiful thing. So it's not just about taking personal responsibility for everything you create in your life. It's also about how you respond to other people's actions toward you. So when people abuse you, they attack you, they do all sorts of things, you still have the ability to take personal responsibility on how you respond to that. And that's your choice. So choice is so critical. Choice is about creating the ability to create liberty. And liberty is so crucial for us. It's beyond freedom. It's the freedom to do what you want to do, when you want to do it, when you want to. All of us have freedom because we have freedom to choice. But in a dictatorship, we are limited by that. Liberty really goes beyond that. Freedom to do what you want to do, when you want to do it, whenever it is. So to create greater liberty in life, choice is about the ability to create that liberty. So we need to make choices to create that. What you decide not to choose also determines what you'll never have in this lifetime. So when you decide not to choose something, you're choosing not to have it. So your choice, so take responsibility for that. And Martin Luther King made the great quote, the choice is no longer between violence and nonviolence, it's either nonviolence or non-existence. Incredible quote. And the last thing I put in the outline was a dilemma that comes up with a lot of Christians, and it's a great one, and Clemmer addresses it in his book as well, and I love to put it out there because so many times we hear people say, well, Mary Jo, if you have choice and you're responsible, that means you're telling me that you're in control, and you're not in control, God's in control. And I look at people who try to take that role with me and say, well, then you're just victim to God. Is that what you're telling me? Well, and they want to try to argue the point. But what they're doing is they're making it an either-or proposition. Either I'm responsible or God is responsible. You're putting it in a box. You're, again, drawing a box. You're not thinking outside the box. You're making a box. God's responsible. That puts you in a box, and it's a box you can't solve. Because it means if God is responsible, then I don't need to take action. And you know what? It's God's will, and I'm a victim to whatever he casts upon me in my life. Oh, that's a great cop-out. Or you take the position, if I'm responsible, then I'm denying God's existence and that he's all-powerful. So I can't do that because that's sacrilegious, right? And I said, oh, great, there you're in that box again. The reality is it's not an either-or situation. God is all-powerful, and you are responsible. That's outside the box. It's not an either-or, it's a both. God is all-powerful, and you are still responsible. Okay, people, chapter 1, chapter 2, let's get some feedback. Anyone in the audience want to talk, share? Did I touch a funny bone on anybody's elbow? Everybody's still on mute. No one wants to share. Hello? Okay, no shares today. Thank you, guys. Great call, great commitment. If you'd like to get more of this book and do some reading on the compassionate family.
Mary Jo?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mary Jo. Hey, I am Mary Jo. I'm not in your group, but that's a very good dilemma of growing Christianity and excuses. It's so easy to fall into that, and it's really good to bring the spirituality up with that doesn't mean we do not act. That's
right.
So key, because it's so easy to use all those things for an excuse. So like, it's not my decision, it's somebody else's. And
mm-hmm.
It's so good to bring that up as Christians to say, yes, it is. It's just leave the judgment out of it. But it's still our responsibility to act without the judgment. And with love and compassion.
Right.
And it's so good to bring that up. I appreciate it.
Mary Jo?
Yeah.
Great. Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a daughter that's having problems with her family, with her kids. And so much of what you said is is going to help her because I'm going to have her listen to this call.
How wonderful.
And I appreciate it
yeah.
so much.
Perfect. Great, great, great. Good.
What
you can use that. Just send in
the
management
the
and have
number
listen to the call.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to because, oh, my gosh, you hit the nail on the head on so much. Thank you.
How welcome. Can we get a replay call number on this?
If you're not familiar, all of these calls are posted on the manatrain.net website.
Okay.
As MP3 files. All you have to do is go on manatrain.net and look at the training calls and hit that button, and it'll give you, you know, you can go look by date or you can do a topic search, whatever you want, and just go into those calls. And, of course, today's the 4th of February, so you have this call. But it's all
okay.
highlighted, and there also is a, you can print off a copy of the outline as well. They're both
that's because when you change your email address, I'm not getting your email again, so I just zapped Lydia and you that information. But
my
and I thought if the call was off because I couldn't
getting.
Get on at first, but I did get on the last few minutes, so it's great
got
what
it,
I heard, so I'll listen. Thank
great.
You.
You bet.
Mary Jo, great, and it was so timely because I realized this morning that I am choosing not to accept certain conversations, and it was interesting because, like you said, you don't have to be right, but to be able to think through a situation that is negative or uncomfortable and to put it on, hit it on the head. And what I came to realize listening to you is that it's not the person I'm unhappy with, it's the pattern that the two people fall into over conversation or dialogue. And so I came up with, I thought, a brilliant idea. I said, well, we're not going to talk about this anymore. Send me an email. And I thought, that's a good solution, but I am making the choice because I don't choose to hear the same thing over and over and over again.
There you go. Perfect.
And by
so that's
the way,
like your movies. That's like your movie situation.
The only thing that you have to do in life is pay taxes and die.
Well, you don't even have to do that. You don't have to pay taxes. Again, look at this. You don't have to pay taxes. You're going to suffer the consequences.
Right.
By
well,
not
that's true.
Taxes. Ray Gabauer, for instance. Okay, we got a perfect example in our Manatech business. You can choose not to pay taxes. But you, every one of those is still a choice, right? It's still a choice. You choose.
True.
So it's so powerful to understand that everything in your life is a choice. People like to argue that, but you can choose not to eat. You don't have to eat. You can choose not to eat. But, of course, then you're going to choose to die, but it still is a choice that you have the power to make.
Mary Jo, this is Nancy, and I just want to thank you so very much. I'm not in your line either, although I think in Manatech everybody's in everybody's line. I'm kind
yes.
of new, and it's like everybody just kind of adopts everybody, and who knows who is. But
right, there you go.
That's the beauty of Manatech. Mm-hmm. But I recruited my ICANN person in January.
Congratulations.
And then, thank you. And then, of course, the challenges set in with family. And so I chose to focus on my family situation, which, of course, is always top priority. But I made excuses not to focus on my ICANN program. And so what you said today made all of the sense in the world because you can, if I had chosen to just do both, instead of realizing that the choices that other people made in my family is what caused the problem to begin with, it had nothing to do with my choices,
right.
then I would be, oh, I don't know, 2 weeks ahead of myself today.
Amen. You got it.
So
you're playing, what you're playing is you're playing the either or game.
Yes.
You got to stay out of the either-or game. See, we love
yes.
to do that. People will get involved, and they'll go, oh, you know, and I've had people do this where I have young mothers get involved, and they start taking off in Manatech, and then they go, oh, Mary Jo, I can't do it because I can either be a good mom or I can be a good Manatecher, but I can't be both.
Do
and
both.
I go, where did you get that rule? I said, where did that come from? You see what we do in our own brain? We make stuff up. We make that up. I have tremendous people in my organization who are tremendous moms and tremendous Manatechers. It's just about us choosing to do both.
Absolutely.
Amen.
And you're only committing to 4 to 6 hours a week, really? Really? Was I so 100% focused on this family situation that I didn't have 4 to 6 hours in the last 2 weeks to do that?
Right.
I don't think so. So I think everything you're saying is a gentle, brutal honesty with yourself. And I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You bet. God bless you. That's great.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay, people, we're going. All right, great call. Thank you guys for being on it, and what a wonderful blessing. Do share it with other people, each and every one of you. You know, you can come across people that have these kind of shortcomings and issues in their life. Send them to listen to the call, because as you know, it can apply to Manitekers or not Manitekers. You can really open people's eyes to see what the world differently. All right, love you all, and we'll be back next Monday. Have a great week.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks. The moderator has disconnected.